Then number 39, not benefiting in return those who have benefited us. Okay, so not repaying the kindness that other people have shown us. Now, as somebody who's meditating on the bodhicitta, we're trying to see all beings as having been kind to us, because all beings have been our parents in previous lives. All beings, you know, do different functions in the society, and we're interrelated, and they help us. And so in that way, trying to repay the kindness of others, because everybody has been kind to us. And again, to understand, what does it mean to repay the kindness? It doesn't always mean going around being goody-two-shoes. And sometimes we might even get completely, you know, frenetic. How do I repay their kindness? I don't know what to do. And we have to recognize that also doing our practice is repaying the kindness of others. We shouldn't think that the only way to repay kindness is to be Pollyanna and run around and fix things. Okay? But just doing our practice and generating the altruistic intention with our practice can be a very good way of repaying the kindness of others. Because, you know, before we can do things physically and verbally to help people, we have to get our own mind clear and our own intention clear and understand things deeply ourselves. And so taking that time to sit on our cushion and look at our own mind and, process what's going on in our life and think about things and discuss them with friends, that can be a way of repaying the kindness. Okay? Making prayers for people. If we can't do something, we make prayers. We do different virtuous practices. We might do prostrations and dedicate it for all beings, but especially for them. We might make offerings and dedicate it especially for them. Or do, you know, like the Chenrezig practice, or request the community to do the Chenrezig practice. Something like this, you know, so that repaying the kindness can be done in many, many ways. Okay? This vow is also, though, pointing out that to pay special attention to repay the kindness of people who, you know, although all sentient beings have benefited us, but pay special attention to those who have really benefited us, especially in this lifetime. So that doesn't mean becoming partial to them. It doesn't mean, oh, well, these people are my friends and they've been kind to me this lifetime, so I'm going to repay their kindness, okay, and benefit them because they've helped me, okay? So it doesn't mean becoming partial in that way, just to the people who we like and who have been nice to us. So it's not closing our minds off to other people and just helping those, but it's reminding ourselves not to ignore the very direct benefit that other people give us. And by not ignoring that and appreciating that, it then helps us to expand to recognize more subtle benefit that we've received from other people who maybe we don't know in this particular lifetime. Okay? So we're communicating here, but when we're talking about repaying the kindness of specific people who have helped us in this lifetime, it's not, you know, to make us more attached to them or to make us people pleasers or to make us more biased towards them, but to use them as an example and then from there extend that open heart to others. Because the thing is that very often the people who we receive the most direct benefit from, because we're in such regular contact with them, we take them for granted. And we don't recognize their kindness and we don't repay their kindness because they're just kind of always around. You know? And we look at the people that we live with and all the little kindnesses that happen in a living situation. People taking out the garbage or doing the dishes or sweeping or, you know, answering the phone for us or doing any number of little bitty things. But because we see that person all the time, we don't appreciate that kindness that they're showing. Okay? Or often, you know, the kindness of our relatives, you know, who help us. Okay, the kindness of our parents, the kindness of our teachers, or the kindness of our bosses who give us the job. Okay, or who keep us on at the job. Yeah. So, you know, just trying to be aware of the various ways in which people have really benefited us, and you know, to take care of those people specifically, and then from there generate it out to others. And I think that this is also involved in basic manners, because one thing that I'm continually amazed at is how people don't say thank you, or how they don't acknowledge receiving gifts. You know, like you give somebody something, you send it to them, and they never write a thank you note saying it arrived. You know, so you're sitting there going, did this gift arrive or not arrive? So, I mean, this is something for us to look at. You know, when people send us things, do we write and say thank you? Do we even acknowledge, you know, that they sent us some money, or they sent us a Christmas present or a birthday present? Yeah? And I think this is incredibly important. You know? And also for DFF as an organization, I think when people make special donations or people go out of their way, it's really important for us to say thank you. And not just, you know, oh yeah, well, we're all working so hard, so thanks for chipping in, you know. or just kind of tuning it out, like, well, it's about time you added something to the group energy, you know. but really appreciate that, you know, we exist due to the kindness of others, and just remembering basic manners. And, you know, when I was a child, whenever somebody gave me something, my mother made me sit down and write a thank you note, you know. And I am so appreciative of her now for making me do that, because it's made me so much more aware, you know, of these kinds of things. And so just, you know, to really look in our life and you know, acknowledging these things. Or when a colleague works overtime for us, or takes some extra added pressure off of our back, or somebody fills in for us, you know, or watches our kids, or who knows what, you know, to really at least say thank you, you know, and really try and repay that kindness by doing that for them in some way too. And again, often, you know, towards our parents, you know, it's always, well, you know, it's mom and dad's job to take care of me. Okay, I'm the kid. It's their job to take care of me. But they couldn't take care of me when I don't want to be taken care of. But when I want to be taken care of, it's their job, you know? And we don't think so much of, well, what can we do for our parents? And even small things, you know, helping them out with this or that. Just even small things can be incredible kindness. Yeah? And so just to be kind of aware of that. I was so surprised. Several years ago, my mother had surgery, and I went down and I, you know, saw her in the hospital, because I don't live near my folks. And when it was the day to check out of the hospital, you know, she had a few articles there, and I put them in her little bag and got them in the car, you know. And it was amazing. I heard her afterwards telling all her friends about, oh, do you know how helpful my daughter was, you know. I mean, I didn't do anything, yeah, but it was some small thing that, because she was sick and in the hospital and recovering for surgery, it became a big thing, you know, in her eyes. From my eyes, like nothing, you know, but just to be aware of those things when you know, our parents or, you know, older people need just that small kind of help that we can give. Okay, so, you know, this is, again, you know, this particular one of, you know, through anger or laziness or, you know, not being conscientious, then not repaying the kindness of others. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you're asking, you know, does it apply just to people within the Buddhist community or other people, or is it our interpretation of vows versus their interpretation? So in this kind of thing, again, it depends very much on the situation. There are certain things where it doesn't matter whether somebody's within the Buddhist community or not. We can, you know, kind of give suggestions for, you know, conduct or behavior that could be helpful to them. Yeah? Again, you know, it's depending very much on the relationship we have with the person in the situation. If it's something that's, you know, in terms of interpretation of vows, we can raise the issue with somebody else. You know, if somebody else has, that kind of, you know, the same precept that we do, and it seems like maybe they're doing something that isn't so kosher, then to raise it up and say, well, you know, this is kind of how I understood the vow to mean. What do you understand it to mean? Or, you know, bringing it up in a community setting with many people, you know, to discuss what the meaning of the vow is. Yeah? Or asking the teacher who gave it. So, you know, it's not becoming moralistic and judgmental, you know, because if we're like that, that kind of attitude clearly shows through and it really puts people off and it makes them generally do the exact opposite. But, or it makes them feel very guilty and resentful. So it's, you know, without a kind of moralistic attitude, but, you know, raise the point, raise the question and you know, get people thinking about this. And then next one is number 40, not relieving the sorrow of others. Okay, so people who are distressed, maybe somebody's grieving because they've lost somebody that's dear to them. Maybe they have lost their job. Maybe they have had a traumatic thing happen in their life. You know, I mean, there's maybe they're refugees, maybe they're who knows what it could be, but people in distress, people who are filled with sorrow and kind of anguish, then trying to do what we can to alleviate that. Yeah. And so here again is where it's actually quite helpful, I think, to do some reading about social problems and stuff. I mean, I've begun to do some reading about trauma and what happens and abuse, simply because it just helps you understand where people are coming from. It helps a great deal. And, you know, so trying to figure out what does it mean to console people who have had different things happen to them. And, for example, you know, somebody who's going in the hospital for surgery on cancer, it isn't necessarily consoling them to say, oh, everything will be perfectly all right. You'll be up and out of the hospital 2 days after surgery. I mean, consoling people doesn't mean lying to them. Yeah, it doesn't mean being falsely optimistic. I think we can, you know, address a situation and be optimistic but also realistic at the same time, you know, without giving people false hopes, without saying, you know, oh, I know everybody in your family died, but don't worry, you'll get over it in a month and you'll be back, you know. Okay? So sometimes it's, you know, the best way to console people is just to listen to them. Yeah? Let them recount their story. And so in that recounting, that can be real healing for them. And sometimes asking questions or guiding the recounting of their story so that they can see it in a certain way. So it's not just, you know, I tell my story to this person and I tell it to this person and I tell it to the next 49 people along the street. Yeah, because just getting stuck in telling our story isn't necessarily healing. It can actually be creating another ego identity that we get very attached to. So sometimes in the process of consoling, we need to listen. Sometimes we need to come in and present other viewpoints that can help people kind of go beyond too much identification with the problem. Now, sometimes we can refer them to other people or give them books written by people who've experienced similar things to what they've experienced. Because often it's very helpful for people to know that other people have gone through what they've gone through and have healed from it. That can be very inspiring. So that can be a way of consoling them. So, you know, trying to do our best, okay? But again, recognizing that it's not a thing of, here somebody's in this incredible anguish and I'm going to come in and make it all better. I'm going to put a Band-Aid on it and, you know, make them so they don't feel that. I mean, we can't even control our own emotions, let alone control somebody else's. So it's you know, people are going to feel what they're going to feel, but if we can kind of give some encouragement or give a different viewpoint or lend an ear, then that can really help them. You know, but recognize that some of these things take time. And then with different people, it's really, really different, you know, how you console. Some people, you know, you can really see what where they're stuck. And if you have a really close relationship, you can go right in there and go, woo, you know? Okay? I mean, I've seen my teacher do that sometimes with situations. And if you have that kind of relationship, you know, sometimes, you know, somebody might come in and go, woo, and it like really hurts at first. But in the end, you realize it's actually right. So some situations we have to do like that. Other situations, it's more a thing of, you know, kind of gently nudging somebody on or, you know, giving them some support or something like that. So what we're talking about here isn't any specific technique, you know, but more an awareness of a situation of, well, how can I console those who are distressed? How can I repay the kindness of others? How can I help alleviate suffering? Okay? So that it really involves some sensitivity to each situation and some creativity in each situation.